welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I am Tyler Smith.
I'm David Bax.
And thank you for listening, David.
Yes.
How you doing?
Still boning myself for not getting the insulation to keep my voice from bouncing off the ceiling here. Listeners, you remind me.
Yeah.
Tyler's been busy with school.
Yeah, the next time you hear, if you're bothered by the echoey quality of the podcast of late, by which I mean the last several months, shoot David an email and say, hey, get on it.
Yeah, you moved in here like almost a year ago, right?
July.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, and we also got to get a special Battleship Pretension themed carpet as well.
That's true.
Cause and I don't think the cats will pee on it.
Oh, good.
So
that's good to know.
Everything's looking good.
So anyway, that's how I am.
Yeah, obviously. here's how I am. This episode is brought to you by Mubi.
Well, I think we're going to do our top of the show thing first.
Oh, do you want
to? It's usually how we do things.
Yeah, sorry. I thought it would be funny to say how I'm doing and then just go into the ad.
Well, that's a little tease.
Okay.
For later.
What is this episode brought to you by? Stay tuned.
you had something on, well, you brought my attention to something.
Yeah. So in my film marketing class, it was the last one of the quarter. And our instructor, who is, in marketing herself, she came in, she's like, all right, before we get started, who here saw A Wrinkle in Time? And it, like, two hands went up. Uh-huh. And she's like, did you see this Ava DuVernay announcement or whatever message at the beginning? And they're like, yeah. And apparently, so the way they described it, the screenings that they went to, there was a message recorded, or whatever you want to say.
Videotaped,
yeah. It was a mimeograph, right? Uh-huh. Of Ava DuVernay, and
it was
apparently
an Edison kinetoscope.
Oh, I've been saying that word a lot lately. Oddly enough, because I was talking about the history of film. Uh-huh. So what they said is that in her message before the movie started, she was talking about like the diversity of the film, and so like that. It just really bothered my instructor, not necessarily even just the diversity thing, but the message itself. But then she said with the diversity, she goes, yeah, that's what I heard. And that's how I knew the movie was going to be terrible, because she's trying to convince you about how good it is from another angle before you even start it.
Right.
But then I saw the movie last night and there was indeed a message, but I don't recall it being particularly about diversity. It was more just about like, what movies can do, and like they can, and it cuts to like her on the set directing, and it cuts to like images from the film that we're about to watch, by the way. And it's more just about like, oh, you know, thanks for seeing this movie and all that sort of thing. And so I had told you about it, or I had asked you,
the way it was described to you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes it sound to me like, and I know you were a good kid, so you didn't have this, this experience, but if you had to have your parents sign off the confirmation that you'd gotten detention or an in-school suspension or something.
Oh, okay.
So you have to tell your parents that you fucked up at school.
Yeah.
And you started like, all right, first let me say,
yeah.
That's kind of how that yeah. feels to me.
First off, hey, okay. I wasn't an angel. I got suspended once for convincing two other kids to fight. Did you not know that?
I don't think I knew.
Yeah. That was, seventh or eighth grade. I don't remember, but, I just thought it would be funny.
Yeah.
And so I was just this go between, and I just convinced, Wes to beat up, Jason, not our friend Jason, but, right. This other guy. And, then, so they both went into the office, and then I got called in, and they're both sitting there, and I was like, uh-oh, I see what's happening here. And, I just lied a bunch. I just, I like to think of myself as Iago from, Othello, but,
one time I got sent to the principal's office for getting punched, not for doing anything. And I'll tell you what happened. I was in a class, and like, I guess we had like an hour where we were working on projects. So mm-hmm. some people were at tables and some people were over at the computers. And this one kid, I think his name was Chris, maybe, was at the computers. And what I didn't know was the whole time I was at the table, the mean kids in the class kept walking by behind Chris and like flicking him on the head or flicking his ear every time they walked past him. Right. So then I have an actual question. I don't know that any of this has happened. I have an actual question for Chris. So I just walk up behind him and I'm like, hey, Chris. And he stands up and turns around and socks me in the face. And I was like, so I had no idea what was going on. And the teacher just like reflexively sent us both to the principal's office. And the whole way Chris is like, I'm so sorry. I know it wasn't, like, immediately told the vice principal, like, okay, David had nothing to do with this. So I ended up being fine. Although they did still make me write down my version of the events. I don't know. It sounds like,
he's like, I just wanted to talk to my buddy Chris.
Yeah. Anyway, that was in middle school.
So I asked you, because you had gone to the critic screening, if she had introduced the film or if it had come with this message, and the answer was no on both counts. Yeah. So this is something that went out to theaters specifically. And based on what these two separate guys in my class said, like, it was very much about diversity. That's not what I saw. So part of me thought, like, maybe it's a different message in certain theaters, or maybe it was this and now it's this other thing. But either way, you wanted to talk about messaging.
Well, I guess in general, because I was curious after you texted me about that. I looked it up and there was an editorial on the MarySue.com kind of being like, and this writer also hadn't seen the thing in front of her screening. She mm-hmm. was like, clearly had heard what you had heard and was like, in the Mary Sue, that site's, political outlook would be very pro that. But this writer was like, this still seems lame. It doesn't seem cool to be like using diversity and representation of these things that we think are very important for sort of like, advertising points or like to try and frame how to watch and how to appreciate the movie before an audience has seen it. Anyway, so I started reading that, and that's when I realized, especially in the comment section, a lot of people were pointing out, like, a lot of people were saying, like, you're saying, like, no, it wasn't really about that. It was just sort of about, here's the movie I made. And then people were saying, yeah, I saw one of these in front of Coco. And a couple of other people said, I don't even know if this is true. But enough people said Coco that I'm like, okay, I guess there must have been a Coco one too. But to other people were like, oh, Black Panther had one or Baby Driver had one, which both are movies I saw at public screenings and didn't see. But then someone also mentioned The Greatest Showman, which I did see at public screening, and I realized, oh, there was a thing there too.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you pointed at me like I had something to say, but I really just wanted to discuss why this is happening. And I think...
I don't know.
I mean, I wonder if it's just... they keep, but maybe it makes it something that, obviously it's come from the studios. Maybe it's asked for by the, theater chains or whatever. It seems like they keep wanting to just like they did with widescreen or whatever, like have a reason. I think they want people to feel special about having gone to the movies as opposed to just watch something at home.
Yeah. That was the Greatest Showman thing. It was the director and Hugh Jackman, like thanking you for seeing something on the big screen. Yeah. And in my mind, I was like, I'll allow it.
Well, you know what it reminds me of? I get what you're saying. Something. I went to a comedy show recently. It was the first time in forever.
Oh, wow.
But you and I used to go to comedy shows a lot.
Yes.
And there was a thing that sometimes got said by the host at the end of the show that always set my teeth on it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
It was like, I don't recall.
Thank you for supporting live comedy.
Yeah, okay, that was it.
I hate that. It's like, no, I'm not here as a fucking cause. I'm paying money to come here and laugh. I'm not like... Yeah. Gonna get all puffed up about my doing my good deed for the day because I supported live comedy. just make me laugh. And people will come, if
be like, hey, do you want to come see a comedy show? It's like, I gave it the plant. All right.
It does kind of rub me the wrong way, in the same way that thank you for supporting live comedy always used to.
Yeah.
In that it's trying to make people feel good, or like they've done something important by doing something they were going to do anyway, and which isn't really the point.
Yeah.
This isn't charity.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I've heard stand-up comics say they hate that too, because it makes them feel like they're charity cases.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure what the answer is to, I've heard, I mean, there's just been many, many think pieces and Twitter threads about what theaters can do to make the movie going experience better. I don't know what it is that they can do.
As far as theater chains could do a lot,
What?
eject people for talking, insist on no cell phone use, like keep the theater clean. Like you do that. And I know that I go to the theaters anyway, but I always go with my guard up because you never quite know.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And so I remember, I was listening to an old episode of, Never Not Funny, and our friend Wayne Fetterman was on there, and he said something like, sometimes somebody just phrases something just the right way that it winds up applying to a lot of things. So it's a phrase I think of a lot, where he and Jimmy, cause they go to a lot of concerts, and Wayne was talking about how he went to some concert where like the guy on stage kept saying like something, all right, now stand up. And you know, and then he's like, make some noise. And Wayne said like, you know, if you do what you're supposed to do, we'll just do this naturally, you know, and just that Wayne Fetterman kind of way. Yeah. But I've internalized that idea where it's just like, hey, look at all, let's say it was like a super, super obvious pro diversity thing. And just like, look at all this diversity. Can you imagine it? It's just like, you know, if you do this right, which you probably will, I'll notice it on my own. Like I don't need you to hold my hand, certainly before the film.
Yeah.
I might be okay with it after the credits, the end credits.
Yeah. I could see that.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But even that is contextualizing it. And it has nothing to do with the movie. In a way, it has everything to do with the movie, but it has nothing to do with the story, with the film itself, which should be able to speak for itself without the director chiming in. Hey, you even mentioned Le Poison on the movie journal.
Yeah.
That there is an element of, we can take some of the edge off, or rather we can recontextualize this. We don't know if that's actually why they did it.
I don't think that's why.
Right.
I don't think recontextualization is what he was going for. Right. But yeah, listen to the movie journal. You guys will know what Tyler's talking about.
But as you described it, the first thing I thought of was this conversation and just a director trying to counter what you're about to see, try to enhance what you're about to see, try to make you feel good for seeing it, whatever it is. And it feels like it could be pandering. It feels like it could be manipulation. I don't know. No matter what it is, I don't like it. I was okay with the Greatest Showman thing because I guess there was an element of like, hey, thanks for seeing this in this format, whether it be this movie or anything else. And I still didn't love it, but I got it.
It also kind of, and they couldn't have known this when they made it. The Greatest Showman thing did have kind of a fun camaraderie to it in with the audience, in the sense that as we've talked about, The Greatest Showman was a movie that Fox didn't seem to really believe in and ended up doing very well. So it did kind of feel like, hey, Hugh and I forget the director's name. It's like, yeah, we're on your side. So that was probably an unintended consequence of that. But
that was another thing. I forget for the life of me. I can't remember where I heard this. I think somebody was talking about the number of films and sometimes TV shows that involve improvisation, and that there's often an element of, look how much fun we're having, you know, and we're winging it and all that. And that it's almost like we're going to leave this in so that you can be in on the fun. Uh-huh. Well, you know what? If you do what you're supposed to do, I'll just feel this way naturally. And so I feel like there are worse things in the world, but it is something that, like, as you know, and as we both have said, like, I don't like when David Chase says that Tony Soprano didn't die. I don't like when Vince Gilligan says that the last episode wasn't a dream.
Oh, like, yeah, I think I forgot about that one. Or when Ridley Scott says that Deckard is a replicant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like any of that. It's not up to you. And if you wanted to say that, you should have said it when it mattered.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And by the way, I saw Blade Runner 2049. He clearly isn't.
Yeah, unless there was some sort of aging replicant that we didn't know about.
Right.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, this is an aging model. Oh shit. Nobody needs that. Damn it. Why did we design this?
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know what I feel naturally like doing right now?
What's that?
Paying some bills.
Absolutely. If we'll do what we're going to do. And then the audience will naturally go to Mubi and type in that code. Okay. This episode is brought to you by Mubi, a curated online cinema that brings its members a handpicked selection of the best independent, international, and classic films. Every day, Mubi's curators introduce a new title, and you have 30 days to watch it. That means there's always 30 wonderful films to enjoy, all for only $8.99 a month. Plus, when you use their mobile apps, you can download films to watch offline. So right now, Mubi is proud to present the online premiere of one of the best films to ever come out of Venezuela, Jorge Thielen Armand's La Soledad. This pertinent, remarkably lucid rumination. At first, I was reading their description here, and I was like, lucid? Why would you describe anything that way? And I was like, oh, I should keep reading. this pertinent, remarkably lucid rumination on the unforgiving effects of time confirms with inspired poetic depth that the personal is always inescapably political. I sometimes like the way that Mubi writes this stuff, because part of me is like, oh, geez, I feel like I'm doing something very wrong if I don't watch this. So that's La Soledad. And then Mubi is also launching a series on the groundbreaking documentaries that have recently come out of China, often against the will of the Chinese government. So the first is a film called Three Sisters, directed by, I believe it's Wang Bing. Be on the lookout for more documentaries like that. It's always fun when, I'm sure it's not fun for the directors, but as a viewer, it's always fun when it's like, oh, that did. Somebody didn't want me to see this.
Yeah.
Somebody official. And yet here I am watching it. But anyway, there is also a special offer for listeners of Battleship Pretension. You can try Mubi free for a month. Just go to Mubi.com. That's MUBI.com/battleship to redeem now, or click on the Mubi ad at battleshippretension.com.
And I want to tell you about tweakedaudio.com. I'm sure that Bruce over at Tweaked loves the it's a great way to start an ad. You know how on commercials when like Matthew McConaughey wants to tell you about Lincoln's, and he like sort of steps, he's driving, you know, it's in the rain, and he drives through a tunnel, and he's like
So anyways, you guys.
All right. So I want to tell you about tweakedaudio.com, which is where you go for professional quality audio, professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors. They look great. They sound great. Tyler and I use them each and every day of our lives. You know what I was listening to today? Judas Priest, because Judas Priest are awesome. And it sounded great in my tweakedaudio.com earbuds. These are available.
If you think that other earbuds are as good, you got another thing coming.
That's right.
that is the only Judas Priest song I know.
Yeah, well,
that I'm aware of.
You won't need a painkiller after this sweet medicine for your ears that is tweakedaudio.com earbuds. They're available at a low, low price.
I've seen fire and I've seen rain.
Over at tweakedaudio.com. But if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low, low price and no shipping charges. So go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Let's get into it, shall we?
All right.
This is your baby.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew it.
I don't think I knew it until I said it. I guess you know me pretty well.
I do. Yes. Okay. This is going to be an odd thing, and it might not go very long. This might be a short episode. But within it, I think
I'm still recovering from our top 10.
You know what? Fair enough. Yeah. It was a nice little down payment.
Yeah. We banked some minutes there.
So, okay. So I have a couple of small papers to write, including one about this subject. Mm-hmm. Although the oh, this is marvelous. The instructor of my class just sent out an email and he said, hey, if you are a master's student, because the paper was 15 pages. He said, if you're a master's student, you know what? You can just go more at the 10 page level. And if you're a PhD student, then let's stick with 15. And I was like, well, all right, that's five pages that I don't have to worry about. Although I'm kind of a blowhard, so it'll probably wind up being 17. it's happened before. So my quarter is almost done, which means I am almost done with school, which is very exciting. And this, I guess, is my final project. It's not like a thesis or anything like that, or a dissertation. So the class that I am taking right now is one that I took because it fit my schedule. It's a class on digital humanities. What is digital humanities? Nobody actually knows. It's still kind of being defined right now. And some people are really against the concept of it. But I've read several articles about people who are against digital humanities, and they don't seem to understand what they are against. But that's all right, because I've read articles that are pro digital humanities, and they don't seem to know what they're in favor of. It's really fascinating. But once you actually like start, you know, looking at certain digital humanities projects, you get a better sense of what they are, which is basically using digital technology, specifically online, to collect data, compare data, and then present it in a novel way. Now, I am probably not going to be able to present my data in a novel way. It'll just be a bunch of graphs and stuff. But I was trying to think, like, and this is an introductory class, so none of these projects are remarkably complex, although somebody is doing one about the depictions of animal death in the films of Michael Haneke.
Oh.
Which is really interesting. But also, like, breaking them down, like, frame by frame, and then talking about, like, she gave a big presentation, yes, this is talking about a film because it's a film department, but also making larger points about death that we as a society are okay looking at and what we're not. And that sometimes we will have a certain type of death that will represent a different kind, so that we're almost euphemistically. And so I was like, oh geez. Okay. Like, that's really, some of these are super complex. And then mine,
I would have gone with Wes Anderson. He likes killing animals too much.
Does he actually?
Yeah, I guess I'm just thinking of, there's the cat in Grand Budapest.
Yeah.
There's the dog in
Royal Tenenbaums.
And the dog in Moonrise Kingdom.
Okay.
Gets it. I feel like there was more that I used to have.
There probably are more, yes.
But it does seem like there's too many animals to die in his movie.
Yeah, but it's, in the case of Michael Haneke, some of them are actual animals that are killed.
Right.
Fellow student mentioned that there was one film in which he killed four horses to get a shot.
Wow.
I don't know if they're going to be killed anyway. Sounds like not. I don't know, but that's pretty horrible. And then I told the story of Richard Donner with The Omen, being unwilling to kill even a goldfish.
Yeah. Richard Donner.
I know. I appreciate that so much more these days. That, and I still enjoy, there was in the making of the Omen DVD that you owned, and there was a special feature, and he was talking about, you know, casting various people, and he was talking about David Warner, and that he had seen this movie that I still can't remember the name of, and he was first made aware of David Warner in that, and he goes, and if you haven't seen it, you owe yourself a treat. And I was like, I guess I do. Like, it just felt very, I don't know, it just felt very empowering. Anyway,
that's one of my favorite, though, as we've talked about before, the commentary between Richard Donner and editor Stuart Baird on The Omen is so delightful.
Yeah.
So much fun.
A movie I don't even really like that much.
It has some great, like, individual scenes.
Yes.
I don't know that it entirely comes together, but, and it's also got Jerry Goldsmith's music. There's a lot to recommend The Omen,
yeah,
but it's not I don't know that it's quite a horror classic.
Yeah. And I think it's, a lot of good performances. I think, Gregory Peck is really great in it. Incidentally, so we just passed our 11 year mark and, on Facebook and I think on Twitter, I put out like, hey, it's our 11th anniversary. Like what are some of your favorite BP moments?
Yeah.
Sure enough. Baboons are dangerous.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Which is a big one for us. But and I gotta say, Fred Hitchcock has shown up a lot. People really like that Fred Hitchcock.
I should probably listen to that.
Some recency bias there, but oh well.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, we are going all over the place. Of course, this isn't going to be a short episode. What was I thinking?
What are we even talking about?
I know. Okay. So I was trying to think. Well, what do I want to go with? And around that time, I was talking with somebody about Darkest Hour. And then I mentioned that earlier last year, there was this film Churchill with Brian Cox. Mm-hmm. And then someone said, oh, that's odd. Cause you know, the John Lithgow plays Churchill in The Crown. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm aware of that. And then all these other Churchill portrayals started showing up in my mind. And I was like, and the year before in 2016, Michael Gambon played him in a movie called Churchill's Secret. Timothy Spall played him. Brendan Gleeson played him. Rod Taylor played him in one scene.
Yeah, that's funny.
Albert Finney. There are actually like one or two others that I can't remember. All of this since 2000. And so I'm just like, what the fuck is going on? Why are people so upset? Like, why are we seeing so much Churchill right now? Mm-hmm. And I thought, like, I wonder if it has something to do with British politics. And I thought, maybe that's what my digital humanities project could be about. Wait a second. I don't know shit about British politics. So it's time to pivot. And we pivoted to one of my favorite things to talk about. Something, an episode I've wanted to do for forever. And I'm thinking of maybe I can fold it into this one.
Sure.
Which is depictions of Nixon is what I always called it.
Yeah. Cause you love how it almost rhymes.
It almost rhymes. So Richard Nixon is a figure that I've always found fascinating and a character when he's portrayed in film, often I find myself uncomfortably similar to him. But I also thought like, okay, well, I don't want to just do, I started developing a theory, about the way Nixon is used in film. But I thought like, okay, well, I don't want to necessarily, just stick with him. So I thought, okay, I'll go with Kennedy as well because, hey, they ran against each other in 1960. One is seen as like the best Democrat and the other, like the worst Republican until recently. And both men had their presidencies cut short, albeit for very different reasons. Mm-hmm. And so I thought like, okay. And both of them have had multiple movies made about them. So I thought, okay, this isn't bad. So I started thinking about like, okay, so why have these guys been depicted so much? And so I'm going to focus primarily on Nixon for this episode for reasons I'll get to in a moment. So with Nixon himself, he had such a unique voice and cadence, and he looked so, he had like the jowls, he had this nose, his hair was slicked back. So like, if I'm an actor, and not unlike Winston Churchill, if I'm an actor, it's like, holy shit, I'm 60. It's time to play Nixon, I guess. Not that that many actors have played him, but a good number have. And he's just an image in America's history. And so I thought like, okay, so there are a number of reasons to want to play Nixon. You know, there's a good chance that you will be nominated for an Oscar or an Emmy if you play him, as Anthony Hopkins did in 1995 and as Frank Langella did in 2008. And then there was a film in the 90s called Kissinger and Nixon, in which Bo Bridges played him and Ron Silver played Henry Kissinger, and Bo Bridges was nominated for an Emmy for playing that. And so I thought like, okay, so there's a reason within the industry to play him. So, okay, so let's look at why somebody would want to make a movie about him. And so once I started getting into that, things really started opening up, because I started with Frost Nixon. No, sorry. I started with The Post. Because The Post, as we both know, was rushed into production as a response to some of the stuff that Trump has been saying about the First Amendment, about journalism and newspapers and all that sort of thing.
Trump and his, you know, the Bannons and other
like
that.
His cronies that I guess he came to hate eventually. I don't know. He has an odd relationship with everybody. And so the film was rushed into production.
Daniels, am I right?
Watch out.
All right.
All right, we'll get you next time. And so it's like, okay, so here's an example of a film that was made in response to something that's happening right now politically. And sure enough, here it's a Nixon movie. Now, we don't see him on screen. We hear him. Mm-hmm. So it's very much about him. And so I thought, like, okay, I wonder if that has happened before. Then I realized that Frost Nixon came out in 2008, and that's an election year. Mm-hmm. And one of the big lines of the film, and indeed it was a big trailer line, was when the president does it, that means it's not illegal. And there are a lot of allegations. Now, don't get me wrong, Nixon actually said that in the interview. But he says it in the actual interview. He says it like in a very calm way, and then the film, it's just like, it's very bad, you know, when the president does it. That's not a good Nixon.
No, you're doing the Futurama Nixon.
I do like that they make him into a werewolf, I guess. And so I thought, like, okay, something that people said about Bush is that he was doing unlawful things and seemed to think that he was above the law, and that he was like superseding his authority to do things. So it's like, okay, so in 2008, when the president does it, that means it's not illegal. And that is seen as like, okay, this is a negative thing during an important election, because John McCain was a politician that people liked for the most part. And then he picked Sarah Palin, and that was a problem. Mm-hmm. And up until then, he was actually running pretty close and occasionally ahead of Obama. And so I thought, like, okay, well, you know, it's not as though Frost Nixon made a big impact on that election.
Real quick, did you see the HBO movie about I can't remember who played Sarah Palin in it. Was it Julianne Moore?
Julianne Moore, yeah.
Did you ever see that?
Game Change?
Oh, yeah, that's what it was.
I did not.
It's interesting, but I remember reading when it came out, they did advance. Politico was writing about the advanced screenings and how for different industries. Like, they did advanced screenings in Los Angeles, people laughed because it's a comedy. Advanced screenings in DC, people were silent because it's a horror movie.
I could definitely see that. And once you start thinking in certain ways, it's really fun to see. Yeah, all right. Guess what year Game Change came out?
I'm guessing 2012.
You're correct.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that I started like really thinking about. And I thought, like, okay, well, Secret Honor, which is a big Nixon movie. He's the only character in the film. Mm-hmm. It's a Robert Altman film, came out in 1984, which was a big election year. And, so I thought, like, okay, so there's a couple of these. And then I started writing down like every Nixon movie that was released. Mm-hmm. And I included TV movies. I did not include documentaries just because there's so damn many of them. Same with, there's even more about Kennedy. And so I thought, like, okay, something I started to notice is that there were little clusters of Nixon movies when there was a Republican president, and then not so much when there's a Democrat. And I thought, like, okay, so maybe I'm developing a theory here, but wait a second. Nixon, the movie Nixon, came out in 1995. That's smack dab in the middle of Clinton. So I thought, like, all right, well, I guess that blows my theory. Wait a minute. I'm only looking at presidents. I need to look at Congress. And in 94, led by Newt Gingrich, the Republicans took the House for the first time in like 30 or 40 years. So much so that Bill Clinton, in response, said the era of big government is over. So like he's speaking Republican language. Mm-hmm. And so looking at it that way, it's like, okay, now I got to start looking at bigger things than just president. So then I looked at the House and the Senate, and then that's when I really noticed correlation. Now, of course, correlation is not causation. That's a big thing that we talk about in digital humanities. But here's the thing. So, okay, I recognize that, yes, I probably sound like some kind of Republican crackpot, except here's the thing.
But you're not saying anything. You're not getting defensive.
Right.
You're not saying Nixon wasn't a crook.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, he told us he wasn't, and I took him at his word. And so the thing is, yes, correlation is not necessarily causation, which is true a lot of the time, but we are talking about people who are making decisions. They are looking at a political landscape, mm-hmm. and then they are deciding to do something. And the fact that Oliver Stone chose to make Nixon when he did, you know, admittedly after Platoon and Wall Street and Born on the 4th of July and JFK, he could do whatever he wanted at that point. I mean, he won two Oscars, his movies were making money. And I think he'd made, what is it? Like, Blue Sky, like Heaven and Earth or something like that. He'd made some another Vietnam film in like 93 or 94. I don't remember. I think it's the one. I think Jessica Lange won an Oscar for it. I don't know. I might be thinking of something else though. So it was Nixon that got me looking at Congress, and then once I started looking at that. That combined with presidential election years. And it's like, okay, so in 76, you get all the president's men. In 80, not that it was a big movie or anything like that, but you get Where the Buffalo Roam, in which Nixon literally says, fuck the doomed. That was like a Hunter S. Thompson inspired film. Yeah. In which Bill, have you seen it?
Where the Buffalo Roam? Yeah, yeah. I have.
It's not a bad movie.
I remember being sloppy, but.
Yeah. But, well, yeah.
Yes, Heaven and Earth is the name of the movie that you're thinking of.
Okay, but that's not with Jessica Lange, right?
No, it's got, as far as American actors, it's got Tommy Lee Jones, I guess, and then Joan Chen, who's not an American actor. But real quick aside about Heaven and Earth.
Okay.
The Dick Clark Productions screening room, which is the place where press screenings are sometimes, has, when you go into the bathroom outside the screening room, there's a stack of like magazines. Mm-hmm. And for, I don't know, I'm sure if it's still there, but for like years, one of them was not a magazine, but like a making of Heaven and Earth, like glossy, like the kind of thing they sent out at award season. And I was like, I want to see like Red Violin type movie about how this thing ended up in the bathroom, Dick Clark Productions. Anyway,
that's I love very specific things like that. I started with Nixon, and I'll talk about Kennedy in a moment. But so then I decided, like, okay, well, maybe this isn't that weird. Maybe movies are made about presidents all the time. So I went through, starting with Eisenhower. I went through looking at every movie past 1960 that was made about any president, mm-hmm. past Eisenhower, including Eisenhower. And so now this is I made a graph here so you can see it.
Okay, let me see if I can interpret this for the listener.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, you were right about Nixon.
Yeah.
Stealth pick here, Johnson. Neck and neck.
Here's the thing, though. Okay. That's what I thought as well. And I thought, I guess there have, especially lately, there have been quite a few depictions of Johnson. And sure, so I thought,
Selma.
Like, Yeah, there's Selma. There's All the Way with Bryan Cranston.
Oh, right. And there's Lee Daniels the butler.
That's right. Well, they're all in that.
Yeah, that one's kind of a watch, yeah. Huh?
There was Path to War with Michael Gambon as Johnson. And I feel like there are one or two others that were notable. But yeah, so I was like, okay, well, Johnson has... He's got more than Kennedy, and he and Nixon are tied. Mm-hmm. So I thought, like, okay, well, that's, you know, so I this is a presentation that I did for my class. And so I thought, like, okay, well, let's look into this. So here are some of the movies about Lyndon Johnson. One's called LBJ. That's one with Woody Harrelson that came out last year.
Yeah.
There's one called LBJ, The Early Years. There's All the Way, which is the one with Bryan Cranston. And then there's Path to War. All of those very much about Johnson. Here are, so the, you know, I'm listing movies that Nixon or Johnson or whatever are in.
Right.
Okay. Here are some other Lyndon Johnson movies. Blood Feud, which is about Jimmy Hoffa versus RFK. J. Edgar Hoover, Kennedy, The Kennedys, King, about Martin Luther King. The Private Files of J. Edgar Hoover, Robert Kennedy and His Times, Selma, mm-hmm. 13 Days, in which he doesn't have a speaking part, RFK, Hoover versus the Kennedys, and Jackie.
Yeah, movies where he's not.
Yeah, he shows up in other people's movies.
Right.
Here are some Nixon movies. Richard, Elvis Meets Nixon, Nixon, Dick, Kissinger and Nixon, Frost Nixon, Elvis and Nixon, Our Nixon, which is a documentary.
Yeah.
And then Secret Honor, which is in which he's the only character. So, So looking at these the number of films, like, yes, they are tied as far as how often they've been depicted, but Nixon movies for the most part are about Nixon, even stuff like All the President's Men, mm-hmm. or The Post, which aren't officially about Nixon, are all about Nixon.
Yeah, there was also, I mean, no one saw it last year. There was also Mark Felt, the man who took down the White House.
Yeah,
whatever brought down the White House.
Yeah,
that's, yeah, Nixon's not in that, but it's all about him.
Yeah, like, this project is very large. Like, if you want to start, like, this is a bigger project than one quarter. And somebody who's not putting a lot of energy into it, as I am not. But it's
sounds like a book, maybe.
It could be a book, but again, I'm not going to write it because that's research takes a lot of time, and I'm.
Yeah, but you're about to graduate.
That's true.
You got all the time in the world.
Yeah. I guess that is true. Yes. I mean, there is that script that I need to read, and then after that, it's pretty open. By the way, everybody. I'm going to need, I'm not working as a photo editor anymore. So, but I have been doing a lot of script consulting lately. So, and I charge a very reasonable rate. So Tyler, battleshippretension.com, if you want me to consult on your script. Anyway. So I thought, like, okay, well, what about the other Republicans? Cause I thought, like, okay, well, if indeed this is a situation where, you know, filmmakers that are maybe a bit liberal, they want to use past presidents and past Republicans or whatever to comment on current Republicans. So it's like, okay, so let's look at that. Okay, Ford is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
With the exception of Chevy Chase, nobody has depicted Ford ever. All right. Eisenhower, very little, and it's only ever Noble, of course. Right. Even in Good Night and Good Luck, you see footage of him at the end, and that's a film that could have said, hey, this happened on Eisenhower's watch. But at the end, there's footage of him talking about the importance of habeas corpus.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, so it even lets, so that's a film that could have criticized him, but even kind of let him off the hook tonally anyway.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay.
HW
shows up in movies about W. He was played by James Cromwell in the movie W.
Okay.
Reagan.
There's a couple of TV movies, right?
Couple of TV movies made after he died.
Okay. And then he's, of course, also in Lee Daniels the Butler.
Yes. Which I still need to see, right?
It's a good movie. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I'm definitely intrigued by some of the casting choices. And looking
I feel
at,
like it's like, in a way, it's like the People versus O.J. Simpson miniseries when, like, before it came out, everyone was like, this thing's going to be a train wreck. David Schwimmer and John Travolta and all these people and Nathan Lane as F.W. Bailey. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
And then it's so good.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of what the Butler is. It's a lot of stunt casting that mostly works out.
How is John Cusack as Nixon? I imagine he doesn't. Does he try to do the voice or anything?
Not really. I don't mean, it's been a while. I saw it in the theater when it came out, so I don't really remember. But I don't remember doing the voice. I remember he's not Secret Honor Nixon. He's okay. Like sullen a lot of the time. He's not in his like paranoid, ranting angry phase most of the time. He's feeling defeated.
Well, John Cusack's the right guy for that. Yeah. Although I feel like he's aged like maybe 5 years in the last 30. Like he still looks pretty young to me and he doesn't look like Nixon as opposed to like they definitely made up Robin Williams. They made up Liev Schreiber to play Johnson and that sort of thing. But anyway. So and then I thought like, okay, well, popularity? What do you call it? Approval ratings.
Oh,
okay. So let's look at approval ratings and see if we can make sense of this. And it's like, okay, well, I mean, Secret Honor did come out in 84 and that was, and Reagan was incredibly popular. So maybe Altman was trying to do something there. I don't know, but whatever it is, it didn't work because Reagan carried 49 states. But then again, so did Nixon in 72. And so I know I'm bouncing around a little bit. There's a lot to cover and I don't necessarily want to cover all of it.
But Nixon's approval rating by the end was pretty low. Which means we will always have Dick Nixon to kick around.
No question about it. And that's the thing is, and so like Ford, really the only thing he's known for is pardoning Nixon. And so I guess you could use that, but he also wasn't that interesting to look at. Carter is the same way. I mean, he definitely had, he had an accent and that sort of thing, but you don't find a lot of depictions of Carter. You don't see a lot of Clinton either. You see Johnson, Kennedy, and you're seeing a surprising amount of Obama given how recent he is.
Yeah. That's true. But in very different ways, in completely different ways, with both Nixon and Obama, you've got kind of a ready-made narrative. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Whereas it might be, because I was going to bring up, when you bring up, approval ratings, especially at the end of the presidency, George W. Bush's was very low.
Yeah.
For the last couple of years of his presidency.
Yeah.
But we haven't seen, we saw W, but other than that, there hasn't been that many. Is it because it's recent, or is it because the story doesn't come with the tidy ending that the Nixon story comes with? Do you know what I mean?
It might be that. It might be that we want some perspective. And of course, came out in 2008.
But what I'm saying is there's a dramatic irony to any depiction of Nixon as president because we already know how it ends.
Yeah.
Whereas George W. Bush, for everything that I never liked about him, or the country grew to hate about his presidency, the Iraq War and everything and the torture and all of this stuff. We don't like there wasn't ever any comeuppance. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
he stopped being president, and now people think he paints his cute because he paints pictures and struggles with his raincoat at the inauguration. Do you remember that?
No.
There's like a little gif of him like having trouble putting up the hood on his like raincoat at Trump's inauguration that got shared around, spread around, and like it was cute. And then, but a lot of people being like, I still think this guy's a war criminal.
Right.
I think this is cute.
I think I think, looking at the chart that I showed you of like the number of movies, isn't it interesting that the top three are all people whose presidencies ended in a very specific way? Kennedy was assassinated. Johnson said, I shall not seek and I will not accept.
Uh-huh.
And then Nixon was resigned from office in disgrace. Like there's a very clear narrative specifically about their presidencies.
Then how come we don't have more movies about McKinley?
Hey, I've been asking the same question. I got to really expand this a little bit.
The guy who worked at my high school, he was not a teacher. He was part of the faculty. He was like basically the guy in charge of all the audio and visual equipment was related to the guy who killed McKinley, had the same last name. Chogus is how it's pronounced. It's spelled. Okay. It's like C-Z-O-L-G-O-S-Z, something like that.
Okay.
Anyway, he had the same last name.
He dined out on that for years.
Maybe the guy who worked at my high school just liked to tell kids that he was related because it's such a rare last name, but it seems reasonable.
Yeah. When I worked at Blockbuster in Studio City, I worked with a guy also named Tyler. His last name was Coster. His grandfather was Henry Coster, who directed Harvey.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Like, and he was like, you know, trying to be an actor. And part of me is like, but it isn't, I mean, your grandfather directed Harvey. He goes, yeah, nobody cares. I was like, yeah, fair enough.
So there's four assassinated presidents, right?
Okay. You got Lincoln.
Shot by.
Booth.
You got McKinley. Shot by. Leon Chogas. Kennedy.
Yeah.
Lee Harvey Oswald or. Your best guess.
Oh boy.
Probably. And then Garfield. Do you know who shot him?
No.
You got to think of the Johnny Cash song.
Is it a guy named Sue?
No. Charlie Gitto. Done shot down the
That's
good
right.
man.
Yes.
Good man.
And that is the only time anybody has ever referenced Garfield being shot.
Yeah.
So jumping around a little bit, so I'll talk about Kennedy as well. Kennedy is interesting because there are way more TV shows about him than Nixon. Nixon gets movies, Kennedy gets TV shows. And when Kennedy gets movies, he's a supporting character.
Now, are you counting that TV show Jack and Bobby? Do you remember that?
I am not counting that.
It's
no.
Not. Yeah. But I don't know if anyone, I don't even think it lasted. Did it last a full season?
I don't recall.
It was on, I want to say it was on the WB.
It was on the WB.
Pre-CW,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. And the premise was that it was two brothers named Jack and Bobby, and one of them becomes president. That's all we know. We don't know which one. And they're loosely based on the Kennedys, but yeah. It was not a biographical depiction of the Kennedys.
Kind of like the idea of it, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, so. You know, on TV, you've got Kennedy, played by Martin Sheen in the, I think, 70s or 80s. I don't recall. Then you have The Kennedys, which was a miniseries in which Greg Kinnear played him. Mm-hmm. And then there was a movie called Killing Kennedy, in which Rob Lowe plays him. And then in film, like Bruce Greenwood played him in 13 Days, which is kind of funny because then he would go on to play McNamara in The Post.
Yeah.
But, and then of course there's a movie, it's literally called JFK. It's very much about him, but he's not in it. You know, he looms over it, but he's not in it.
Who played Jackie in the Greg Kinnear thing? Was that,
I think it was Katie Holmes,
right? Yeah.
I think that's it. Yes. And I don't remember who plays Jackie in Killing Kennedy with Rob Lowe.
Okay. I can tell you who plays Jackie in 13 Days.
Who's that?
Actress named Stephanie Romanoff.
All right.
She was on Angel. That's why I know that.
Got it. Okay. I should have assumed that. and so it's just it's a fascinating thing. And I'm not even sure necessarily what to conclude from that. Is it that because a lot of the Kennedy TV shows and miniseries or TV movies are often about the family. Or they're about Bobby, and then sometimes they're about John. And so it's just, it's very interesting because I think he's just brought in with like all of these other characters, these other historical figures. Whereas like Nixon is just right there by himself. And so I've not yet, from a research standpoint, I've not yet charted like all the different, like when these TV movies aired and when these movies came out. I haven't yet charted that. It is notable that, you know, JFK came out in 91, which is the middle of, which is towards the end of the George H.W. presidency, but that's the thing, is that's a film that's all about how you cannot trust the government.
Yeah.
And the guy in the White House was the former head of the CIA, you know? And so, and I mean, it would be easy to say that this is very, this is paranoia, but if you,
you
look
miss
at like
the time when your party used to elect people who weren't such complete buffoons.
Yeah.
Or didn't at least present as buffoons.
I mean, it's, here's like, on one hand, I wasn't a big fan of George W. Bush, but probably he's like, well, he was a governor. I'll take that.
Yeah.
And then like McCain was a senator, but it's, yeah.
I would say,
but he's a governor like because his dad was, got on the job basically.
I'm not the first person to say this, but I would say as of this point,
mm-hmm.
Donald Trump has more done more damage to the Republican Party than George W. Bush did, but George W. Bush did more damage to the country.
Well, we're not done yet.
that's you know? What I'm saying. Anyway.
Yeah, it's a mess. And it's very, and doing this research led me to watching a lot of interviews with Nixon, after he got out of the White House, and he was fucking brilliant. I mean, he was brought down by his own insecurities, obviously, right. And he did terrible things, but like he was, I saw an interview, where he was brought in like to just kind of comment on a current situation. So he and Ted Koppel were talking, and it was like a 1 hour thing of just him commenting on like trade disputes or something like that. And he just knew it all. And he was just like, man, he was like incredibly smart. It is unfortunate that,
well, that's why he you know, a tragic figure.
That's the thing is like, while Oliver Stone might have made Nixon in response to Republicans getting power, and while he clearly did not like Nixon, I think Oliver Stone is too much of an artist to just flat out condemn him. Yeah. Same with W is actually not a full on condemning film either. And by his own admission, he released that in 2008 so that he could try to sway the election in favor of the Democrat. And then, you know, Michael Moore obviously released Fahrenheit 9/11. And so like there definitely is precedent, for people releasing films in order to, in response to politics, certainly, but then also trying to sway politics. And so it's been a really fascinating, project. And my instructor mentioned that if you want to think abstractly, then you could say something like Zero Dark Thirty is an Obama movie. Argo could be considered a Carter movie. You know,
mm-hmm.
because hey, Zero Dark Thirty is all about Obama approving. I mean, he's not even in it, but approving of this thing. And then Argo is about like, hey, this happened under Carter's watch.
Okay, the Zero Dark Thirty is another one I haven't seen since it came out, but it spans
Yeah,
yeah,
but yeah, but then like it happens under his watch, and of course, both films. When did they come out?
Was that 2012?
That's right.
Is that really when Zero Dark Thirty was? It was.
I know. It's crazy that it's like that old now. But and that's the thing. When I don't mean to be like an asshole and be like, guess when that came out? An election is every 4 years, you know.
Right. And you know, there's midterms as well. So yeah, exactly.
I try to look at midterms. I'm like, well, there's always like every 2 years is an election year on some level.
Yeah.
You know. And so part of me is like, okay, maybe I should look at that. I was like, I don't have the energy to look at every 2 years. But
in our, like you and I are both 35. Oh no, you're 36 now.
Yes.
You're the old man.
Yeah.
In our memory as a politically aware adults, has there ever been a midterm that has had this much, as much anticipation as 2018 that has been as much buildup?
I mean, it's, you know? It depends on, I mean, certainly 94. I mean, I wasn't aware of that.
You and I weren't really paying attention, but
2010 was a big deal.
But I don't mean the results, because obviously,
right.
Yeah, you also had that. Yeah, you had that in
2006. Yeah, yeah.
So but I'm saying in like the year leading up to, I feel like.
But I mean, you had Obamacare passed, and that really ruffled a lot of feathers. Okay. And so 2010 was like a big deal. And sure enough, the Republicans took the House. But okay. So in the Post, when McNamara, you see him like ranting about Nixon, and he says, this is different. I genuinely feel like everything about the Trump presidency is different.
Yeah.
Like even when he, I mean, I guess it's inevitable that we'd be talking politics, but like even when he, let's say he does something, let's say he passes something that is beneficial in some way. I feel like it's almost a coincidence, like, because it's such, it's so fucking chaotic there that I feel like it's maybe not, it's incidental, you know? And I feel like it can't possibly be him. Like if anything, somebody else drafted something, it sounded maybe okay to him. He signed it probably without reading it. And while he's busy tweeting and firing probably more competent people. Not that Tillerson was remarkably competent, but
I didn't sure who you were talking about because he's fired so many people.
Yeah. Yeah. And so,
I liked that, that joke. We haven't talked, you and I haven't talked on mic about the Oscars, but, Jimmy Kimmel's joke about hope being everywhere, except the White House, hope was fired on Wednesday.
Yes.
That was pretty funny.
But yeah, and so that's the thing is it's something that it's always it's going to keep going. I mean, in 2020, be on the lookout for I'd say 2019 and 2020, be on the lookout for movies about, I'd say, Nixon.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Bush.
Well, that's the thing is like in general, for like starting with probably at 95 and probably about in 2000, like documentaries became so easy to make. So like Bush and Obama, there've been a billion documentaries made about them.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? So I think that's what you'll see a lot more of.
I watched that. This is going back way back, but that, the pro John Kerry documentary, that was sort of like a reaction to the whole Swift boat thing. So yeah, actually a pretty good movie.
And
it was clearly made with it. Like you're talking about made with a purpose in mind to defend John Kerry.
And I think, you know, this year, if the midterms swing, let's say the Democrats get the House and the Senate, I'm interested to see what the impact will be as far as movies that are not necessarily greenlit. I'm not on a studio level, but like that people want to make. Let's say the Republicans hold the House and Senate. And then it's like, then it's all about 2020. Right. And I feel like it will genuinely have an impact.
I mean, we're already seeing, like you said, with the Post, we already see movies, that are clearly, I think we're seeing more, an increase in environmental fears because I think they were already there. And then the fact that we have, elected an administration that is so anti science essentially, I think we're seeing bigger fears and things like Annihilation or whatever, which that's only part of what that movie's about.
Yeah. And that's, you know, and of course there's in 2016, there were two movies made about Obama. It was 2016, right? That Barry and South Side With You came out.
Yeah. I never saw Barry. I saw South Side With You and I thought it was a good movie.
And people seem to like Barry as well. And it's just like, okay, so those both came out in an election year. Citizen Four came out in 2014, which I think is probably the most, critical film made about Obama.
Yeah, I guess so.
Like that it's pretty damning there at the end.
Yeah. I mean, we've already talked about, Oliver Stone. Not that many people saw Snowden, but I think that definitely gets into it because it shows, because Edward Snowden starts out as a Republican who becomes a Democrat because he expects Obama to undo what George W. Bush was doing, and not only did he not undo it, he made it worse. So I think if more people saw Snowden, or if it were a good movie, which it's not, unfortunately, maybe that would be.
And a lot of people didn't see W either. I feel like Stone is just not the draw that he used to be. Like there was a time when his movies were like, everyone was talking about JFK.
These be exciting. Snowden is such a fucking snore. That movie. Yeah. Did you ever see it?
No.
Yeah. You don't need to.
I mean, I think W is actually pretty good. It definitely does not have the energy of his movies in the early and mid 90s, but I think it's pretty good. He has a hell of a cast. But yeah, and so we've been going for a while.
We should probably wrap up.
But yeah, so this
we haven't said anything. We've said a lot without saying anything.
So this is is the project that I've been working on. I'm really excited. My instructor really liked it.
You think I write this book before someone else, one of our listeners?
I know.
Takes it from you.
Just, you know, give me like 3% and you can just do what you want. And it was interesting, like presenting it to my class. There are only like 6 people in the class, but we all gave presentations and they thought it was really interesting because, you know, and we all get along very well and they know what my politics are and all that sort of thing. And so, and they said like, this is really interesting. This is something that just wouldn't have occurred to me, you know? They said like, and other people that I've told at school have said like, yeah, I mean, I would have said that anybody who says that like the media is liberal and they're working against Republicans, like I would have said they're paranoid. I was like, seriously? Like the movies, like, okay, you can make an argument, maybe journalism isn't quite so biased as like, you know, Ann Coulter says it is, but like, I mean, movies.
Well, yeah, we had that whole conversation with Scott on the podcast, which I think you're right that the movies tend to lean towards when it comes to party.
Yeah.
Lean towards Democrats. But in terms of values, movies often tend to be pretty conservative, I think.
And we're talking
you guys can find a whole episode. We talked about that.
And we're talking, and that's the thing, we're talking about presidents now, like we're talking about historical figures. So it's like in that instance, yes, I think you're going to find way more positive portraits. Like you'll see. So we've got the top three since 1960. So, and even going back further since Eisenhower, there are more movies made about Nixon, Kennedy, and Johnson. We've established that Johnson's movies can get folded into Kennedy's pretty easily. And so we have arguably the best Democrat and, until recently, the worst Republican. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because they're both frozen in time because, hey, Camelot, you know, mm-hmm. and it was cut short because of this terrible thing. And then this was cut short because he did terrible things. And so it's like, I mean, you can't write that better. Not to mention Nixon himself was, I mean, it's on record, obsessed with Kennedy. One of my favorite lines in Nixon, I kicked off my presentation with this, is him looking at the official portrait of Kennedy and saying, when they look at you, they see what they want to be. When they look at me, they see what they are. And I love that quote.
It's definitely perfect for your presentation.
Yeah. And so that's my presentation.
This was a lot of fun. I wish you were staying in school and doing more papers like this so we could have. when you're graduating. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
You haven't actually graduated yet, but you finished school. So on today.
Yes.
The day of David Cronenberg's birthday.
That was the plan.
And our friend of the show, Susan Burke's birthday.
Hey,
yeah,
that's great. It's a good day all around.
Yeah. So, all right. So that's that. You can find us at battleshipretention.com. You can email us at david@battleshipretention.com or tyler@battleshipretention.com. You can follow me, David, on Twitter @DavyPretension. You can follow Tyler on Twitter @TylerPretension. You've also got More Than One Lesson, which the website's still going strong.
Website's still going. And there's some good stuff going over there. You know, you recently talked about The Lodger. Our writer, Reed Lackey, has been working his way through every Hitchcock film. And I think he's still... I think he's moved into the sound era, but like he's starting from the beginning. And so you can follow that. It's called A Year with Hitchcock. And
I think you got rid of all your VHS, right?
Not all of it, but yeah, I know the one you're talking about.
You had that like 10 film box set of early Hitchcock.
Yeah.
That was all, shitty looking.
Of course.
Really cheap tapes. But it had some like notably had like Lady Vanishes and the 39 Steps and the First Man Who Knew Too Much.
Yeah.
But then it also had like Murder and East of Shanghai and like Rich and Strange. I watched like all of those. In fact, I might be writing or might have already written about Number 17 for the website for my Monday movie next week.
It's,
which is a completely nonsensical movie.
What's so important about the Number 17
is to Alfred Hitchcock as Beat the Devil is to John Huston. In that, it's the, like They're essentially like crime comedies that don't actually make any sense or where the plot is not important whatsoever.
Is it effective?
Number 17 is, it's a mess, but it's fun. And it's only an hour long.
And I never saw Family Plot. Did you?
I've never seen Family Plot. No,
I am curious to know when Hitchcock is actively making a comedy, is it as funny as when he is making a thriller that is occasional, that has like moments of humor? Yeah. I'll bet it's not.
The first Man Who Knew Too Much, there's a fight that's just two groups of people throwing chairs at each other. So funny. One of the funniest things I've ever seen. Yeah. It's just people throwing chairs.
Yeah.
All right. That's it. You can find us at all those places. Thanks for listening.
We'll get you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.